Hi, and welcome to I Got You Podcast. My name is Renee, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Keisha and Heather. Today, our topic is, are you insane? Coping with mental health during a pandemic. We're joined by our esteemed guest, Charisse Keldo. Charisse is a licensed clinical social worker with over 20 years of experience. She owns her own practice called A New Way Therapeutics, located in Hartford, Connecticut. Charisse is very versed with treating individuals with mental health and substance abuse disorders, while offering individuals in group treatment. Charisse, welcome.
I am happy to be here. Thank you.
So, Charisse, let's get down to it. So, we have this terminology being thrown around a lot, talking about mental health, etc. What exactly is mental health? And what is a mental health issue?
So, mental health is, in a nutshell, any issues that affect the mind. So, in other words, mental health is mind wellness. And so, it is overall looking at what is it that we need to do to be well from the neck up, not pertaining to the medical piece where our mind is concerned. And oftentimes we pay a lot of attention to the physical health, but seem to think that the mental health piece of it is irrelevant. And I beg to
differ. Absolutely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And what is mental illness? You have, in your perspective, what is mental illness and how does it manifest itself and what are some of the signs we should look out for?
We look to the National Institute of Mental Health, which is an umbrella of a department under the umbrella of the National Institute of Health, because it's important for us to provide information that is accepted out there and that there is research behind. And so I also actually quote what they say and what I do believe is mental illness. And they specifically were talking about serious mental illness or SMI. We like to toss around these jargons and things like that, but I prefer to speak to the layperson who doesn't really know. So, serious mental illness is defined as a mental, behavioral, or emotional disorder resulting in serious functional impairment, which can also substantially interfere with or limit one or more major life activities. And the burden of mental illness is particularly concentrated amongst those who experience difficult disabilities due to the SMI. If we were to look at mental illness, it helps to make person to feel it as on a continuum. And so when we see the person who is hospitalized because of mental illness, or we say the person who is crazy, quote unquote, it tends to be on the low spectrum, on one side of the spectrum. And so most of us do not associate with that side. And so we tend to see ourselves on the continuum that we could have mental health issues or mental illness.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, that's funny because we always look at mental illness as just one-sided. I know, as for me, like, growing up in the Caribbean, when we see people on the road and, you know, dirty and clothes, but that's what we thought about mental health. That's the only thing that we could associate it with, this madman walking around naked or whatever, and that was it for us. But it's important to know that there's, you know, a wider, that you could look like different things.
Absolutely.
And so mental illness is very, very common. And so that alone tells us that just because you're not hospitalized or have years or not able to get a job, then I don't have mental illness. So not true. And I suspect that's part of why, which, you know, having the stigma and for us not believing that we could have, we have in our experience of mental health, that, as you said, is what we look to.
Yeah.
That's what we use as our reference. So I'm hoping tonight we can share and shed some light onto what that is. Hopefully, this platform will be part of the light that is now being shone on highlighted mental illness and to quietly and forcefully chip away at the stigma that is being presented.
So, you know, we're living in a pandemic, and it's real, and for a lot of us, we didn't really expect it. It came on so sudden, and there's so many things that goes along with that, being in a pandemic and, you know, living through certain uncertain times. What are you seeing when it comes to, you know, living through a pandemic and surviving in COVID? How does that affect one's mental health? How can it? Because it's just so new to us, and I'm sure for myself, I feel stressed from it. So I can imagine that it might be affecting our mental health and we don't know it. So how does it affect it, living in a pandemic?
Very good question. It does affect our mental health and the best of us. And so can you just imagine someone who is already struggling?
Yeah.
That could be maybe worse. Someone who has never seen themselves as having any mental health issues is now finding themselves that they're easily overwhelmed, that they're irritable, that they tend to be more angry than usual, that you feel like you're not getting enough sleep, that you're sleeping too much, or that you are eating more than you normally do, frustrated. Just feeling like you're running on empty all of the time, just not feeling yourself. That I know is one of the ways, not one of, or some of the ways that this pandemic has been affecting our mental health. Unfortunately, too, if you're in the group of people who have experienced losses, having loved ones pass away because of these symptoms can be even more devastating. On top of that, when you're already just struggling to cope, a lot of the lives have been blurred in our lives, right? We used to be able to go to work, come home, right? So there's a separation. Then the children go to school, they come home. There was a separation here, right? These imaginary boundaries. And so what has happened now is that a lot of how we know life as it was has changed, and just changed overnight. And not because it changed overnight, most of us anticipated that it would not have been lasting as long.
Yeah.
So, this is something that is very, very difficult. And so, as the more it prolongs, it's the more that we are seeing the symptoms that come into service even more. And so you may hear the term around here, all of us, it's like we don't have one home or the car breeze, I just want to say,
we all feel that way. So we're living this pandemic, and we know we're feeling a certain type of way. When should one seek help for a mental issue? You know, at what point, you know, you're here and you're feeling a certain kind of way, you're like, you know what, I need to seek help because this is my, this feeling that I'm having is just overwhelming and I'm not functioning the right way that I should. Like, you know, what would you suggest that, you know, when to seek help?
I would suggest that if you notice that you are experiencing a change in your mood. If you are experiencing, and not just a change, but it is affecting how you're functioning in your day-to-day life. It is affecting your sleep. If you're struggling to get things done that usually were not a big deal for you, then absolutely, not just share about it with your girlfriends or with family or others, but to take the next step, which is to talk with a provider.
And
a first-time provider can often say, well, this is what has been happening for me. Because a lot of people think that they cannot broach the issue of mental health with their doctor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sometimes they even go as far as minimize, because sometimes the doctor may check in, so how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, doctor, everything is fine. But this is the time for us to learn how to label,
yeah,
how to call what we're experiencing by name. We cannot know that it's depression, or we might have an inclination, but we minimize it, we avoid it, or just completely reject it, that this is what's happening. Who we turn to is very important, because we can turn to other family members or friends who are struggling, who will just say,
go pray about it.
It's very important to pray. If faith is your thing, it's very important to pray. But we also have to do something about it.
Do something about it.
So with what you're seeing right now with the pandemic, what has been the major mental health issues that you're seeing that's going on right now?
So in my practice, and in talking to other colleagues and peers, we are seeing a lot of worry. We are seeing a lot of fear, which then transcribes into depression. Mm-hmm. We are seeing a lot of grief and loss, grief over loss. A lot of grieving, not just over loss of who has survived, but grieving as to how life was, and grieving as to what is going to be. This is going to look like a loss of jobs, a loss of not being able to provide for the family. And so all of these things have been building up and been keeping up almost like hole on our heads for a lot of families. So we see that the families are really struggling, silently struggling, and almost as if they're lost in the translation of what's happening in our world, which is so topsy-turvy at this time. So people have been reacting to the pandemic. People have been feeling unsafe, and so not just the pandemic, but what is happening politically is also impacting a lot of that, a lot of the worries, a lot of the fears, depression, the anxiety.
Okay. So how does a person know if they're depressed or they're just sad? What's the difference between depression and sadness?
We all get sad from time to time, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. All the time.
And so sometimes we have these, we throw around. One of the things that I've said that sometimes I wish schools would teach the emotions, the feelings chart to children, be able to help them to label accurately how they're feeling. So we all experience sadness. The difference with depression is that it's not just sadness, but there is a prolongedness to it. So we tend to use a 2-week window that if you're experiencing certain symptoms, which I'm going to say what they are to be specific, but if there's a prolonged experience of this, and then it's impacting your functioning. So the key thing is, how are these emotions, how are these thoughts affecting your ability to function? And so it's not just me feeling sad, because it's a natural thing. Reaction, something happens, and feeling sad is the natural emotion in that time. But if it's wrong, what else is going on aside from the sad? So as clinicians, when we look at screening someone for depression, we have various tools that we use to do that. So it's not just someone coming in and reporting to us that they feel depressed. As a matter of fact, we tend to hear, oh, I'm depressed. I'm depressed.
Yeah,
hear
very
loosely, like a document. You're feeling sad or you're feeling bored. Well, what really is going on?
Right.
So it's tossed around loosely. But there are specific symptoms that we look for. And the questions tend to be over a 2-week period. Are you happy? Because we are looking for if the symptoms are prolonged. So we would look for if there's persistent sadness, anxious, if the person is anxious, or having feeling empty, almost numb, this hopelessness going on, feeling pessimistic all the time. Are you feeling guilty, feeling a sense of worthlessness, feeling a sense of helplessness? Are you losing interest in things that once were pleasurable, such as certain hobbies, certain activities? Are you experiencing very low energy? There's fatigue going on. You're just not motivated now, right? Do you have problems with concentration? Is it hard for you to focus? Is it difficult for you to remember things? And this is aside from us saying, oh, we're getting old, and, you know, we're in the from yesterday, today. But are you noticing that it's very hard for me to concentrate, to focus, remember things? It's hard for me to make decisions. What about my sleep? Am I sleeping too much? Am I not sleeping enough? Even when I sleep and I think I have gotten X amount of hours, do I still feel tired or fatigued? Are there changes in my appetite? Am I eating too much? I mean, not eating enough, and will go through the day without even realizing that I have.
Wow.
Am I thinking of suicide? Just want to check out and not be here. Have I tried that in the past? And was, you know, am I more irritable? So it's a whole gamut of signs and symptoms that we look for.
So is it just a couple of symptoms that you have, or how many do you look for? So if I have 5 out of those symptoms, do you diagnose the person with depression because of those 5 symptoms, or what? How does that work?
So it's not just 5 or so of those symptoms.
The severity, okay.
Very good question. Mm-hmm. Look at the severity. So in other words, you don't have to be experiencing all of them. But we look at the severity. Mm-hmm. So are the symptoms mild?
Okay.
Are they moderate or are they severe? And so based on our assessments, we do have guidelines of scoring, because then it says, okay, rated with this number or that number.
Okay.
So one of the assessments that comes to mind that I'm thinking of, and other assessments actually, we do have a rating scale for it.
Okay.
And based on the rating scale, then there is that prescription for treatment.
Okay.
But what we do know is that therapy is very effective for depression, as well as in some cases, the person might also need medication along with the therapy.
I feel like there's a spectrum, right? There's a spectrum, I would presume, that you can have slightly depressed, mm-hmm. and you can have extreme depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, and the extreme depression is the range that you spend of medication oftentimes, I would presume. If there's extreme depression, do you like, typically in the clinician world, is that what you guys do in terms of treatment when there's extreme depression?
So when we say moderate to severe depression,
mm-hmm.
And based on if the individual is in treatment and is not progressing in treatment in psychiatry, mm-hmm. then there would be the conversation about perhaps adding medication. If the person has been treated for depression before, has been doing very well, and so medication has helped them. So I've had individuals who say that is the course that I want to go. Sometimes they even come in with their primary care doctor saying, hey, what about depression? Because we noticed A and B, and they come into therapy and eventually would get onto medication. So medication is not, say, the first thing first.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Most people will want to go for. But it's something that we also provide education on and guidance around that.
Okay.
You know what, Sharice, when I listened to you talk, I was like, seems like I've been depressed most of my life. Because when I listened to you, like, we have bouts of sadness, you know, we lost our appetite But I think it's important for the audience to know that, and you did mention earlier, like, there's a time frame, right? A time frame we should really think about when we're thinking that we're depressed. There's a time frame. So that's very important to know. And what was that time frame again? When you say, okay, if I'm feeling a certain type of way for this long, I need to...
2 weeks or beyond. And then the symptoms are impacting your function. So not just you having these symptoms, but are they impacting your ability to function? Are you observing and noticing that you're not up to... Because sometimes we, you know, hear of or experience, maybe for yourself or somebody else, they're depressed. They won't get out of bed.
Right.
That's one phase of depression. Men, for example, experience depression, for the most part, different from women. For men, it could look like irritability and anger.
Okay.
So they could be very tired. Not to say that there are men who experience depression who sleep all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a misnomer to believe that somebody who is depressed cannot function in any way at all. Of course, you have on the end of that spectrum, you can have somebody who cannot function, is not able to work, is not able to get out of bed, needs hospitalization. Mm-hmm. So that's at the other end of the spectrum. We have people who have had depression with psychosis. We have perinatal dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So we have all the types of depression. And so what I suspect we want to do is to just focus on depression in a clinical depression.
Right.
Because the areas can be for different podcasts, so you're going to go into more detail.
So when depression becomes like a mental illness, like, because, I mean, as you said, there are different spectrum of depression. Like, so when would it be deemed a mental illness?
So, the clinical depression, when you say depression, talking about clinical depression, that is when you're experiencing these symptoms that I have outlined previously. Mm-hmm. When they are ongoing for a period of time,
okay.
When you're assessed and you meet the criteria for depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Long for some people, and it can be situational. For example, in the winter months, aside from COVID, there are a great amount of people who struggle with seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah.
And so that can last for some people up to 6 months. And then they start like waking back up, but the winter months are very hard. Doesn't mean that just because I experienced that in the winter months, I should not pay attention to it, I should not take care of it. No. So we have these different aspects. The thing is, if you're feeling in these symptoms, talk to someone.
Okay. Right.
So, Charisse, do you have a lot of people in denial, though, that don't know that they're depressed? They feel like this is a part of their life?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Because for some people, especially working with single mothers, especially working with women who they may be the only breadwinner, especially working with mothers with young children, they don't have, I've been told, I don't have time to be depressed. Well, the fact is that we're not functioning optimally. And no, nobody has time to be depressed. You have to make time to be treated and to get treatment.
Absolutely.
All right, so we talked about COVID being questioned back, but what I wanted to know is how has COVID affected people's dating and sex life? Do you come across patients that deal with COVID from that aspect?
I have. And so it has, for some people, those who are I have heard, and I'm going to try to phrase this as accurately as I can. When we look at, we just talked about depression, but another mental health issue that we have seen is the anxiety. And And so for people regarding dating and things like that, for people who struggle with social anxiety, which dating is already an issue, and their peers put a lot of pressure on them, I've heard a few times, more than a few times, that COVID has just been a godsend for them. In the sense that the social isolation that we have to be doing,
really?
I've served as a reason for the pressure to be off of them.
Oh, wow.
I can see that. I can see that.
For others, they're turning more to dating sites that they usually thought about. And so, for those who, the brave souls, are dating and going about life. So there's a group of people that it really has not impacted in a negative way.
Right.
They're on the sites and they're taking the time now instead of being able to face-to-face connect. They're taking the time to build up the relationship, getting to know the person. What, in a way, has, I believe, allowed for healthy relationships to be developed? I don't need to see you right now because I can't see you.
Right. Wow.
And so, regarding the sex part of it, that's not something that I do in my practice. And so far, I have not heard where there has been any major issue. If I should piggyback and make some indirect correlation, know that domestic violence has gone up since COVID. And so when we think about domestic violence, in particular intimate partner violence, which is pretty much most times what it is, then we could see that part of it perhaps being impacted in a negative way. But that in detail, because I don't provide that treatment, I could not speak professionally on that. You know that domestic violence has gone up. That in itself can impact the dating aspect of things. As well as what I
said. Right. I can imagine that, well, with the pandemic, right? So your dating slows down. A lot of people were so uncertain as to how this COVID is going. So, in a sense, we kind of stop dating. And then, so that in itself creates some form of isolation. And isolation, I think we're human beings and we're meant to be connected to each other. So if you look at it that way, I can see how it could affect one's mental health, so to speak, not being able to having those connections with people because we're so afraid of, you know, we don't know what COVID is. And we tend to, as I said, we tend to not realize how important physical connection is. So if you're not dating, having sex, right? So that is like, you know, it all goes in. And so if you're not doing that, then you become a little bit more sad,
more stressed.
You know, sex does the body good. So
he's an advocate.
Then I can see how that could affect you.
Gotcha.
And that's
how
I absolutely.
And yeah. So, what I also see here, there are people, I do hear and know that people are still dating. I had a conversation this week about humanness and just human beings in general, that we do find a way to create some degree of normalcy in the challenges and difficulties that we face.
Yeah.
You all know I have friends who are photographers. Are still dated.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So we talked a lot about depression, right? Are there some other everyday mental issues that we overlook?
Everyday mental issues that people and it's easy to overlook them, especially when you have an idea of what mental illness is, which then allows that to explore those thoughts, right? And so, for example, I did mention about seeing patterns. that most times we don't tend to pay attention to that until we realize that we're dragging the next
day. Yes, that is so true. That is so true.
Right.
We don't tend to pay attention much to our appetite until we see the scale started for something.
Right.
Whatever you are not doing, that is working. The concentration and the focus that I did allude to earlier on. What about the change in the mood? You're so short-tempered. Everything is just a fuss for you. Just a bother. The children call you, it's like, right? One more thing. I don't want it. I don't want to do this. I can't be bothered.
Right.
This is such a struggle. We tend to overlook those things and just say, oh, I'm just tired. I've had a long day.
Right.
But if it's happening for a while, the you know, for no apparent reason, we're just blowing up. We feel overwhelmed. We just feel like we can't catch a break. And so we just normalize these things and say, it's just the pandemic. Yes. It could be that it's because of the pandemic, but it doesn't mean that we should ignore that because we know there's a cause.
Right.
So sometimes there's a cause and effect, but other times it could be built up over a period of time.
Right.
And so for some people, instead, oh, I'm so exhausted or so, let me grab a glass of wine.
Why is
it? Right.
But the body.
Yeah.
It's myself.
And so, you know, let me get some weed. And so, but what I do is it's your business.
Yeah.
You will say, how much are you smoking? Has it gone up? You can one too many glasses of wine when normally you would. Because these things do interfere with sleep. So we think we are getting a winded down process from having these substances in our system. But actually, it's a false sense of security leaning on these things. So,
absolutely.
Yes, we tend to easily overlook that we're not having those rules-down moments. We're not replying to ourselves like we do. Just irritable and mad over everything all the time.
Right.
Go in the kitchen and somebody's there and you're sucking your teeth and rolling around.
Just mad.
Love the road.
Just roll around.
Yeah. It's like chill. I can go
okay, so we're talking, and a lot of times, you know, especially in our Black community, we don't have access to therapists and stuff like that. So how do we perform self-care when dealing with the pandemic? Especially when you don't have access to therapists. Like, what are some of the things that we can do?
I'm so happy that we're hearing more and more about self-care. But how can we create dedication and so some of those things may look like just going outside. Yes, it is cold. But have you ever sat outside and just taken a deep breath of the cold air? Well, you don't want to be out. But I tell you, just having that breath just does something to you.
Yeah. It's like sunlight.
It's like sunlight. Connecticut, over the north, it's a beautiful state. And we have the outdoors that are just gorgeous. January 1st was an outdoor day where the staff encouraged us to go out and to hike. There's so many hikes. If you're afraid of the cold, bundle up. The thing is, try to do something that's not within your normal scope of things. These times are about being creative. So just being out. You can't get away from your kids. Bathroom. Lock the door. Spend a little extra few minutes taking the shower and you're in the shower. Just doing some breathing. Intentional about that.
Yeah.
Doing some know that having a spirit of gratitude, having and teaching yourself to find the small things, don't have to be big things that you're grateful for. I am so thankful for this hot shower right now. I'm so thankful for the hot shower right now. And just saying it to mind, right? Because the fact is that there are others who don't even have them.
True.
We know that when we allow positive thoughts to come in, it helps our mental health.
Right.
And so, you can't go to the salon anymore. Watch YouTube videos and do your nails yourself.
True.
Right.
Or get on Zoom and chit-chatting with your girlfriend while both of you are talking about nail polish or redundant and stupid. But it's an opportunity of you not being absorbing a break from the worries of life.
Yeah. And what's big on social media these days, Charisse, is self-care Sundays.
Oh,
it's a lot of self-care Sundays going on. And, you know, women will do masks, they'll, you know, do facial, whatever that makes them happy in that moment.
Yes. And if you can't find somebody to do it with yourself.
Right.
Put some music on. If you're feeling sad about the day, do not dance and Western no sad song on.
Right.
Put some real music that can boost your spirit and blast it as loud as you can and twirl. Even if you have two left feet, you cannot dance. Just because we have to behave our way out of this. We have to behave our way out of this. And are we going to up to it every day? Absolutely. We are not. But if today you put off doing something for yourself, and it doesn't have to be half an hour. You may not have half an hour to chill. But in that 5 minutes, pour yourself even some water. If you have a wine glass, you're not a wine drinker, pour yourself some water in the wine glass and sit for an hour.
Yeah.
So powerful. We have to be creative. Who can tell me that my water, as a matter of fact, right? Who can tell me that my water, for some reason, it just starts tasting better?
Right.
And you're sipping on it. So it's these little things that you take for granted that we've got to go back to.
True.
When's the last time you sat with your kid if you have children? You can't get away from them. How about inviting them into the self-care?
Where they are.
When was the last time you colored as an adult?
Yeah.
Right. Be able to escape, but you invite the family in on the front.
So, according to the CDC, Charisse, 50% of adults in the U.S. will experience some form of mental illness in their lifetime. Why is it still a stigma within the Black community as it relates to mental health? It's a big stigma.
This is such a great question. And this platform, as well as others, allow for us to begin to chip away at this number. Because this really is a crisis in our community when it comes to mental wellness.
Yes.
And the idea is that if you have mental health issues, then you're no longer a substance.
Right.
Value. So we tend to attach a value system to mental health. Let's say if someone has cancer, it would be a GoFundMe page, it would be barbecues, it would be drugs, all of that stuff. But yet still, if you have mental health issues, you are pushed aside and you can't share. Who are you going to share? Oh girl, you still have that, get over it. Be strong. Move on. Pull your bootstraps up. So not until we start having these conversations to educate our people that our minds are just as important as the rest of our body. And a healthy mind ensures us having a healthy body. You can't have one without the other. You get a diagnosis. Say you have a medical issue going on, you start worry about it. Let's see how that recuperation process is going to move on. So we do know that the mind can and is important to the physical field. So get over.
Right.
More empathetic. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And most importantly, we have to continue conversation so that there's equity in access to treatment. There is value in who we are. We need to start talking about it in the churches.
And not just say, go pray for it.
Right. Go pray about it.
Absolutely. We need to have conversations when we are sitting in the nail salon. Aren't nails done? We need, just as how we gossip about other things in the hair salon, we need to start have these conversations.
Right.
They begin to be a normal part of our everyday life. So if somebody says, I have depression, you're not looking at them side eyes and like, oh, my kid not going over your house.
Right.
Absolutely.
Charisse, why do you think that people take care, they go to the doctor, right, if they have a bellyache, a headache, or anything else, but when it comes to their mental health issues, they won't. They're scared to talk about it. The same thing you're talking about. They won't talk about depression. They won't talk about anxiety. Why do you think that is?
Aside from the stigma, there is penalty today. There's penalty in the form of being ostracized. There's penalty in the form of we are no longer of the value piece of it that I'm talking about. We are very judgmental. If someone has mental health issues, all of a sudden, they move from up there to down there.
Right.
And so this is something that we have been fed this lie that our mental health is not important. I think it goes back even all the way back to slavery and probably even beyond that. In Jamaica, Bavara talks about the mental slavery. And so we enslave ourselves when we dismiss that these things are happening to us. We enslave ourselves mentally when we ostracize others who are struggling. We enslave ourselves when we don't find value in you, in the person who is living on the street, to be able to do this, or all of a sudden your ability to be is no longer there just because now I have depression. If I told you I had depression, what would you think of me? What about?
So here's what I think, Cherie. So as I listen to you talk, so we're trying to put bring mental health issues to the forefront. But I feel like within the Black community, we're our own worst enemies because we wanna bring it to the forefront, but yet we don't stop to really, as Renee said, empathize or even to kind of educate ourselves about the issue. And because if we educated ourselves about the issue, some of the statements and the ostracizing people would not take place, because then you would understand that, you know, mental health illness is a part of life, and people not necessarily can function, and it's not necessarily shouldn't have that stigma behind it. So I think we should educate ourselves within the Black community as well to understand the issue in its entirety. I think that's the problem.
Absolutely. So because we know that a lack of education is also a big part of it, right? Lack of knowledge, the people perish from a lack.
Yeah.
And so we can start, one person can make a change. See what's going on around us, right? And so we can make change for good or for bad, one person. And so if we start with ourselves in not tolerating that conversation around us when others are speaking down at or saying derogatory comments or remarks about someone who's struggling with mental health issues, to learn to say, hey, are you okay?
Right.
And not ask the question because you have a family, but to really ask the question because you are caring and you are concerned. And to say, hey, how about talking about it with someone? What I have to say in my practice is that I'm seeing here the younger generation, the millennials, and the generation Z's, let me tell you, they are now talking about.
They're talking.
Yeah.
They are saying, they're talking about, I'm going to see my therapist, like how we would say, oh, I have a doctor's appointment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's great.
Myself,
that's awesome.
When I hear it.
Yeah.
And sometimes they overwhelm me because they tell their friends, you need to go see my therapist.
Right.
So they're having these conversations among themselves in their circle, which means that they're no longer feeling afraid and frightened.
Yeah. Right, right.
They're saying, I'm going to do something about it.
About it.
My parents did.
Right.
Yes.
So, Sharice, see, it is Black culture that is not getting seen by the therapist. Do you see a lot of other cultures getting seen by the therapist?
So, the funny thing is that you do have white folks who do seek out Black therapists.
Okay. Oh, they do? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I do have other peers who are of different races who, I think, it's not just Black, but I think in the Asian community, there's a struggle with that too. It's
okay.
Not as forefront as
so the Asian, okay.
For whites too, that you see that. But they're kind of chipping away at that too, and speaking up because we see how the pandemic has impacted them.
Okay.
Is it mainstream as white teaching therapy? No.
Okay.
What happens is that now we are seeing that more people are reaching out, people of color are reaching out,
okay.
But they are being more specific now. But they're not
yes.
enough of us.
They're not what?
They're not enough of us.
Oh, okay.
They're being specific about asking, because the thing is that they don't have to explain and sort of pretend or. Especially last year when Black Lives Matter was going on, there were people who were struggling who had white therapists because they felt like they had to do some precursor information input here for you to get where I'm
coming from. Mm.
With a Black therapist, I jump right in.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
So you actually say less because I know what you're driving on.
Right. Okay.
Right.
It does make a difference culturally.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They're coming. The train is slow, but it's
coming. It's coming. That's good. Okay.
All right. So, as it relates to, we always hear about the concept of a strong Black woman and a strong Black man. Do you think that has any impact on our mental health as Black people when we have those that terminology being thrown around, strong Black man, strong Black woman?
And so, for me, the answer is yes and no. Although I would prefer that it is a straight up no.
Okay.
We are defining strength from a place of value.
Mm-hmm.
We are putting value on you as a strong Black woman,
mm-hmm.
right? And so my strength is my voice. My strength is showing up. My strength is pretending. My strength is tall. My strength is all of
yep.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Inside, I'm crumbling.
Yes. Can't show weakness.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
So, mm-hmm. so I we run the risk of because inside is crumbling that the outside exterior we need to shore it up some more.
Mm-hmm.
So we become more aggressive, we become more forceful, we are more tense and things like that, which can be intimidating.
Right.
Right. But what if strength was confidence? What if strength was showing up? Fully, because my mind is fully where it's supposed to be.
Right.
Well, it's healthy. And so I don't have to come from a place of posturing or things like that or pretense.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
everything is in sync.
Right.
So when I say a strong Black woman, a woman of confidence knowing that I need help and seeking help, not strength.
or a man.
Right. Or
men are struggling with depression, or men are struggling with trauma issues, or men are struggling with anxiety that are going unaddressed.
Well, what really is that? So I think it's time for us to really start having these conversations and redefining what strong is.
Right. Exactly.
The definition of what strong is. Exactly.
And a strong man is one who has emotion. And who recognizes that his wife isn't doing well or his girlfriend isn't doing well.
Wait, Charisse, we need you to say that again. About the emotion part for a black man. We need you to say that boldly. Because I don't believe a lot of men understand that. Could you say that again?
Yes, strength is when a man shows up and he has emotions, he recognizes them, he understands them, he sees them in his woman, he sees them in his children, and so he can lead from that place of strength. So strong is not about your physique, you're going to the gym and pump up. And you're emotionally incapacitated.
Relate
to your woman is from a place of anger and irritability instead of understanding, babe, I'm not, something is going on.
Exactly.
Why this not done? Why the dish is not done? Why the house is like that? Not recognizing that something else is going on, and wait a minute, this is usually not my babe. How she functions. So that's what strength looks like. We have to be the voice to redefine strength. It's not about going to the gym. That's very good. But how sexy it is that we have a man who is connected to his emotions.
Yes, Lord.
That's sexy to me.
Yes,
that's
it is.
It's connected to your depression. Even though you're still getting up and going, oh, by the way, people just seem to think that you're depressed, you can't function at all. That's not true. You have a lot of depressed people showing up in the workplace. A lot of anxious people showing up in the workplace who haven't addressed it. And I'm not saying you're depressed, you shouldn't work. You should work. That's very important. But you're not addressing it. So you lash out at your coworkers.
We are coming to the close of our segment. Keith or Arkella, do you have any final questions that you'd like to talk with Charisse about or ask Charisse?
No, this has been great.
No, ma'am, this has been really good and informative. Love it.
And Charisse, thank you so much for your time. I think this was very enlightening. I think this is a conversation that we need to have within our communities that we don't have enough of. And I think I know that this will help a lot of people. So thank you so much for your time. And typically when we close out our show, we ask our guests to reflect and just think of one thing that you are grateful for and share with the audience.
I am grateful that I have this opportunity to impact other women, not just women, but men. I am grateful that we are located at 151 Newport Avenue in Hartford. My number is 860-351-3211. At this time, I am not in my office because of COVID. I do respect that there are others who have concerns, and I want people not just to stay mentally well, but also physically well. So I am doing, at the moment, just telehealth. And I also would like to leave folks, because I like to leave them with knowing that there is help out there. And so we have a crisis line that they can text to. And it's texting the word hello, H-E-L-L-O, to 741-741. And this is a crisis text hotline that is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this is throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will be there to provide help. We also have, if you're a veteran, we have the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-TALK. We have the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK also. That is here for the Veterans Crisis Line and the suicide, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, talk to someone other than your friend, because
mm-hmm.
our friends can keep us sick.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to someone other than your friend. Talk to your doctor. I'm not feeling well. This is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And our doctors are really good at saying, hey, see a therapist about it.